I want to talk this morning about an interesting halacha topic, and that is based on something that we find in this week's parsha. We find that Yitzchak Avinu tells Yaakov that he's only allowed to take a certain type of girl as a wife. And he tells Yaakov Avinu that he's not allowed to take someone, Mibinos Kanan. He's not allowed to take a woman who's from a certain community. He's only allowed to look for a wife in a different community. And the question that the Torah to me raises on this week's parsha is, does a parent really have a right to tell a child who they should or should not marry? Now this is unfortunately, it's a question that comes up every once in a while, and that's something that I feel is worth discussing this morning. So this morning's topic that we're going to discuss is Kibud Av V'Em in general, a real general sense, and then break it down into the question that the Torah Tumimah asks. Does a parent have a right to tell a child who they should or should not marry, or do we assume that's not the parent's business? It's my business who I'm going to marry. It's nothing to do with my parents. So let's just begin like this. We have a mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, Parshas Yisro, Kabid es Avicha ve'Asimecha. Rav Asher Weiss once pointed out to me that there are three times in the Torah where we find a mitzvah to be mechabit somebody. One category of people is Kabid es Avicha ve'Asimecha, make sure to honor your parents. The second type is Kavod Talmidei Chachamim, that we learn out that you have to have kavod for Talmidei Chachamim, means both men and women. If somebody is an accomplished scholar in learning in Torah, we assume you have to show them respect. And the third classification, the third category of people who we assume one has to show respect for is the Shevet HaKohanim. The Kohanim who we assume are on some sort of elevated madrega, they're on some sort of higher level than the rest of us Yisraelim are, so we assume you have to be mechaved them. But what Rav Asher Weiss pointed out to me is that this kavod is not the same in all three of these categories. We don't assume that it's the same type of respect that one has to have for the parents as you have to have for a kohen. We don't assume the same respect is due to the Talmud Chacham as is due to the parents. So let's look just one quick paragraph that he pointed out to me, and that is as follows. So skip that first paragraph. That's just the first three categories. Then you skip to the second paragraph, Ach Pashut. However, he assumes that it's simple to bechal echan mishloshes elu in each one of these three categories of people. Number one, parents. Number two, talmidei chachamim. Number three, this group of kohanim. Yesh geder shoneh shel kibud. We have a different understanding of what it means to show respect to them. It's not the same. Kibud av v'em gidro shimush v'sheiris. When we talk about kibud av v'em, that means to service, to assist, and to aid the parents. Like the Gemara says, how am I supposed to fulfill my obligation of Kibud Av V'Em? Ma'achilo, ma'albisho, ma'ashkeyu. I give my parents to eat, to drink. I take care of all of their needs. I make sure that they have clothing. I make sure they have a nice car. I make sure that everything that they need is taken care of. That's number one. That's what it means when we talk about Kibud Av V'Em. It's service. It's assistance. Then you talk about the second category, Kavod Rabo. What does it mean when I have to have respect for a Talmud Chacham? So we assume that means Gidro Hachna. What it means is submissiveness, to have a sense of humility, to feel a little bit inferiority, to understand that they are greater than I. That's what Kavod Talmidei Chacham means. It doesn't mean you go ahead and give the Talmud Chacham a cup of coffee every day. That's what I have to do for my parents, service. What I do for a Talmud Chacham is to show my humility, to show, that's how I show Kavod to them, to show that they are greater than I. And then you have the third category, which is Kavod HaKohanim, Gidro, which means, when you talk about being Mechabed the Kohanim, it means Hokara veromimus. It means to show a sense of appreciation, a sense of distinction, that they are different, that they are more prominent, that they have some sort of eminence in the greater community, in the greater Jewish community. That's what we mean. There are three different types of kavod, even though the pasuk might tell us that you have to be mechabe three different types of people, but the way to be mechabe them is very different. So what we're talking about this morning is the kavod of parents, which the Gemara says is machilo, malpisho, mashkehu. It means you have to service, assist, and aid the parents in any way that they need. So we'll talk a little bit further on how much am I obligated to spend, what do I have to do for them. We'll get into that detail a little bit later. Just I thought this was an interesting way to frame it. What exactly does it mean when we talk about different kavod, when we discuss showing respect to different types of people? So the first question that I want to discuss is a question that the Menchas Chinuch talks about, and that is, should we assume that this mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em is in the category of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro? Or is it in the category of Bein Adam L'Makom? Is it something that we consider to be interpersonal? On the one hand, my parents are human beings, I think. So because my parents are human beings, and I have some sort of obligation to another human being, that means it probably should be a mitzvah that's classified as Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, because it deals with two human beings. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, you have, the Gemara tells us, Shlosha Shutfim Ba'adam. The Gemara says in Maseches Nida that there are three partners, so to speak, in the creation of every human being. One is the mother, the father, and God himself. So there's three partners. And the Gemara says, Hukash Kavodam L'Kavod HaMakom. The Gemara says, we assume Kibud Av V'Em is so serious, it's so central, it's so important, we assume that it's as if Hukash Kavodam L'Kavod HaMakom. When you are respecting your parents, it's as if you're respecting God himself, because God is part of the picture. There are three integral components to every human being that's created. So we assume, since Hukash Kavodam L'Kavod HaMakom, since we assume that there's some sort of connection between God and my parents, so to speak, therefore we might assume that this is really in the category of Bein Adam LaMakom. That's an interesting question that the Minchas Chinuch raises. Now, the Minchas Chinuch gets into a discussion about this, and he says, well, perhaps when we talk about responsibility Bein Adam LaChaver, perhaps when we talk about that category, the only time we can assume something belongs in that category is if it's something that's applicable to every human being. Take, for example, Kibud Av V'Em is not an example. Why? Because Kibud Av V'Em only applies to my parents. Maybe the Achronim talk about, maybe it applies to my step-parents also, maybe it applies to my grandparents, to my in-laws. Okay, those are all parts of the same question, but it certainly doesn't apply. It's part of the same question, but the answer is it does. So I want to recognize the presence of my mother-in-law who deserves my respect. So she has to remember also, we spoke about the three categories of respect. So, okay. Anyway. So what's interesting is, the Minchas Chinuch says that perhaps, that was actually very disrespectful what I just did. So the Minchas Chinuch says that perhaps it could be that when we talk about Bein Adam LaChaver, the only time you have an obligation, which is an interpersonal obligation, is when we're talking about something that's applicable to everybody. For example, the Mitzvah of Tzedakah. Mitzvah of Tzedakah is something that relates to everyone. You'll say, what do you mean? All of my friends don't need my tzedakah. Yeah, but someday they might. So the mitzvah of tzedakah is something that's really applicable to everyone. The mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, like we spoke about last week, 2 weeks ago, that's something that applies to everyone equally. And because of that, we assume that's certainly a Bein Adam LaChaveru category. But says the Minchas Chinuch, perhaps when you have something which is only relegated to a very small group of people, to a small sector, to only my parents, my in-laws, my grandparents, then perhaps maybe that shouldn't fall under the category of Bein Adam LaChaver, or perhaps that's only something which is Bein Adam LaMakom, like lighting Shabbos candles, like making Kiddush on Shabbos. Maybe that's part of that category. This is an interesting question that the Minchas Chinuch talks about. Now what you find is, interestingly enough, what you find is that we really do see in the Rishonim two different reasons for the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. And what I think you see from that, from the fact that the Rishonim give two very different reasons for Kibud Av V'Em, what you see is that perhaps Kibud Av V'Em is really part of both categories. It's part of Bein Adam LaChaveru, and it's also part of Bein Adam LaMakom. On the one hand, some Rishonim say that Kibud Av V'Em is part of Hakaras HaTov. When we recognize, and it's very hard to recognize it until you have your own children, when you recognize how much a parent does for a child, how much a parent loses sleep for a child, how much a parent works hard that the child should be successful, you understand how much you owe that parent. And therefore the Rishonim say that perhaps the obligation of Kibud Av V'Em is really well beyond the obligation of making Kiddush on Shabbos. It's an obligation that stems from Hakaras HaTov. That's number one. They go so far as to say that perhaps if somebody does not respect their parents, some Rishonim say it's as if you have borrowed money from someone and not paid them back. That's what some explain. That's how seriously we look at this. It's as if you have borrowed money from someone and not paid them back. If you don't respect your parents, because we assume it's Hakaras HaTov, it's an obligation that I have. Hakaras HaTov is not something like, go say thank you. It means I feel indebted to this person for everything that they've given me. And that's the same that I should feel to somebody who gives me money and I feel the obligation to pay them back. That's what some Rishonim say. On the other hand, other Rishonim say, no, the reason why I have to respect my parents is because, simply, my parents are like God himself. Because God created the world, my parents created me, and because I have an obligation to respect God and to fear him and to love him, therefore I have an obligation to respect my parents as well. I think what you see from this discussion in the Rishonim is that really it's both. Really, on the one hand, you have an obligation to respect your parents because they are in some way like God himself. They help create you, they help bring you into the world. But also, above and beyond that, we have an obligation to our parents because we have an obligation of Hakaras HaTov. Now, lest you think Hakaras HaTov is just a nice, cute, fluffy idea, Hakaras HaTov actually is probably one of the most central themes in all that we talk about in our Hashkafa as Jews. What do I mean by that? What I mean is like this. The Medrash tells us in the beginning in Sefer Bereishis, Parshas Bereishis, on the very first pasuk, Bereishis Bara Elokim. We're told God created the world, and it says the word Bereishis there. Now, the Medrash goes into an extrapolation. What exactly does it mean, Bereishis Bara Elokim? I don't understand. What's the question? Why is anyone bothered? What does it mean, Bereishis Bara Elokim? I wasn't so bothered. In the beginning, God created the world. The Medrash seems to be bothered by something, and the Medrash assumes there's something more that's being referred to here. There's a reference to something else. Says the Medrash, perhaps, Bereishis Bara Elokim, why did God create the world, says the Medrash? Bisvil Yisrael Shenikra Reishis. It's because the Jewish people are referred to as Reishis. And that's what it means. The world was created because at some point there was going to be a Jewish people. The world was worth creating just for them. That's the first opinion in the Medrash. Then the Medrash goes on and says, maybe, perhaps, Bereishis Bara Elokim, why did God create the world? Bishvil Torah Shenikra Reishis. As we know, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. The Torah is referred to as Reishis. So therefore, the Medrash says, world was created either because one day there's going to be a Jewish people, or because one day the Torah is going to be given, and that's the reason why the world was created. So far it makes sense. We know Jewish people are very important, we know the Torah is very important. Now, says the Medrash, a third interpretation. Bereishis Bara Elokim, you know what it means? Bishvil Bikurim Shenikru Reishis. You know why the world was created? Not because God wants us to believe in Him. Not because there's going to be a Jewish people at some point. Not because there's going to be a Torah at some point. I would understand all of that. Says the Medrash, third interpretation, Bereishis Bara Elokim, the world was created. You know why? Because one day there's going to be a mitzvah of Bikurim. What's the mitzvah of Bikurim? To bring your first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, that's more important. How many times a year do we do the mitzvah of Bikurim? Once. Once. And we only do it when there's a Beis HaMikdash. How many times do we make Kiddush on Shabbos? 50 times a year. How many times do I believe in God? 1,000 times a day. So the whole world was created because there's a mitzvah Bikurim that we fulfill maybe once a year when there's a Beis HaMikdash. Does that make any sense to anybody? How do you understand that? The Medrash says the first two opinions make a lot of sense. The world is created because there's going to be a Jewish people. Wonderful. They're going to bring goodness to the world. The world was created because there's going to be a Torah that's given. That makes a lot of sense. The world was created because one day there's going to be Bikurim and we're going to do it once a year. We're going to perform this wonderful mitzvah, go to the Beis HaMikdash, give some fruits to the Kohen. That's the reason why the world was created. Does that make any sense? Explain the Mefarshim, you know what it means? Because what do we do? What's the highlight of this mitzvah Bikurim? What do we do on that occasion when we go to the Beis HaMikdash? What we're doing is we take our first fruits and we proclaim before God. There's a mitzvah not only to bring our fruits to the Beis HaMikdash, but there's a proclamation that we have to make. Arami Ovid Avi, God, you saved me from my ancestors who were persecuted, who were almost annihilated. You saved us. And we go through the whole history of the Jewish people, and then we say, Hine hevesi es reishis pri ha'adama shenasata li Hashem. I submit myself before God, and I show Him, and now I'm coming in front of you, and I'm giving you back the fruits that you gave me. It's all about Hakaras HaTov. That's what the Medrash tells us, because the crux of what the mitzvah Bikurim is, you know what it signifies for all of us? It's showing our gratitude to God. It's understanding that everything we have is from Him. Hine Hevesi, from the beginning of time, from when Arami Ovid Avi, from when there was oppression of the Jewish people, from so many thousands of years ago until now. I thank God for all of that, and I thank God for my success that I have right now. Hakaras HaTov is what Bikurim is all about, and says the Medrash on the very first pasuk, in the very first parsha in the Torah, if you want to understand what Judaism is all about, it's all about Hakaras HaTov. The reason the world was created was because Bishvil Bikurim. Because one day there's going to be a mitzvah Bikurim, and that's an ideal. That's something that all of us need to keep in mind. It's something that we have to live by. It's something that we have to think about. The Ramban writes, if we'll look together, the Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo, look at the second entry on the source sheet. The Ramban tells us, Kavanas kol ha-mitzvos. What is the point? Our obligation, what are we trying to do? What do we accomplish in all of the mitzvah performance, in all the activity that we do throughout the year, throughout the day? Says the Ramban, Shenamin belokeinu, that we should believe in God, Vinoda elav shehu barano. You know what the objective is in all of our observance of mitzvahs throughout the year and throughout the day? Shanamin belokeinu. It's to remind us that we believe in God, that there's someone out there who wants us to have a greater calling than what we would have thought otherwise. But number two, vinoda elav shehu baranu. It's to take these opportunities and thank Him for creating us and for making us successful in the world that He put us in. Vihi kavanas hayitzira. That is the reason for creation, says the Ramban. She'ein lanu tam achar biyitzira harishona. The Ramban says there is no other reason why this world was created. Ve'ein kel elyon chafetz b'tachtonim. God has no interest in us. You think He needs my lighting candles on Shabbos? You think, what, like I owe it to Him? This is what He's waiting for all week? You think He needs me to daven? You think He needs me to do chesed? He's not interested. I mean, of course He asked us to do it, but why did He ask us to do it, says the Ramban. Ein kel elyon chafetz b'tachtonim melvad sheyeda ha'adam v'yoda lelokav shebaro. The reason why He implemented a system and made us remind ourselves so many times a day and throughout the year that He is part of our lives. You know why He did that? That we should know that we have an obligation to thank Him. That is the reason, that's the purpose, that's the goal of all of the mitzvah observance that we all fulfill. It's an incredible insight when you think about it. And this is the Ramban. It's not like some Musar Sefer somewhere. This is the Ramban, one of the Gdolei HaRishonim, who doesn't throw words around lightly. This is what he tells us, kavanas kol hamitzvos. This is the foundation, this is the objective of all of our observance that we have throughout the year. My father points out from Rav Soloveitchik another incredible insight, and that is for those who say nishmas on Shabbos. So you'll notice there's two, it really stems from a Gemara, but the Gemara tells us and then it finds itself in nishmas. When we talk about nishmas and we thank Hashem for everything, ilu finim al shira kayam, we have so much to be thankful for. So what do we say? Hamahulo barov hatishbachos. Think about what those words mean. Hamahulo barov hatishbachos. I owe God gratitude for most of the things in my life. And for the rest? Does that make any sense? I owe God a thanks for some of the things. Rov hatishbachos. But everything else, okay, it's not Him, it's me. I was successful in my business, nothing to do with God. I woke up in the morning, okay, I have to thank God for that. But everything else is mine. So what do we mean? Hamahulo berov hatishbachos. God only deserves my gratitude for most of the wonderful things that He does for me. What about everything else? And in fact, the Gemara has this problem. The Gemara says that's why some disagreed and said, "No, you don't say rov hatishbachos. That doesn't make sense. You deserve God deserves everything from us, all of our gratitude." So the Gemara says, really, what we should say is kel hahodos. We should just call Him the God of thanks because He deserves our thanks for everything in the world. Not rov hahodos. Yet when we talk about nishmas, we say both. We say hamahulo berov hatishbachos, and then we say kel. So what's going on? So Rav Soloveitchik suggested, you know what it is? It's based on a Gemara Baba Kama. The Gemara says something interesting. The Gemara says you go to a big banquet and you're served by a waiter. So what do you say to the waiter? Thank you very much, or you're supposed to, and you give him a tip. Does that make any sense? Who's paying the waiter? The waiter is being paid. He's salaried. When I go to work, does anyone come to me afterward and say, thank you very much, you did such a wonderful job today? No, I'm doing my job. Right? Anyone who goes to work, you do your job, you're paid to do your job. No one has to say thank you to you. So why is it when I go and I'm served by a waiter, he's being paid, he's doing his job. So why do I have to say thank you to them? So the Gemara says, yet this is our practice in the world. Chamra lamara, which means the wine belongs to the owner of the party, the wine belongs to the person who hired this waiter, but tivusa l'shakya. When I say thank you, I don't say thank you to the owner, I say thank you to the person who served me. That doesn't make sense. And the reason why I suggested Rav Soloveitchik is because if we don't get used to, if we don't accustom ourselves to thanking those who are around us in our close vicinity, then in the end we're going to come not even to thank the person who's on top of all of them. And he suggested that's what it means over here. Of course, we owe all of our gratitude to God and to nobody else. But imagine, I'm never going to say thank you to my wife. Never. Why should I thank you? I give you my paycheck, so you spend my money. So what? Why should I say thank you? We have a deal. Why should I ever say thank you to anybody? The reason you're doing this for me is because I did something for you. Why should I thank anybody? The reason why is because, yes, you're right. But in society, if we don't get ourselves used to, if we don't accustom ourselves to thanking other people, even though they may not deserve it, we have an even exchange. I give you this, you give me that. Why should I say thank you if you are going to say thank you to me, if you're going to pay me back with a favor? What's the reason? Because if we don't accustom ourselves to doing that, then in the end we're not going to realize that we have to thank the Almighty who's on top of everything that's being orchestrated in our lives. That's what it means when we say, Hamuhulal Birov HaTishbachos. We don't want to give everything only to God. God tells us, I want you to reserve some of your thanks for people that are around you that impact your lives in a positive way also. And even though you'll say, but what do you mean it all comes from God ultimately, but realize it's the same like when you're in a restaurant and you thank the waiter, even though they're being paid. Why do we thank them? Because that's our nature, because we have to. And if ultimately we don't do that, we won't end up having gratitude for the people that are much more important, for the people that really deserve the thanks, more than the waiter himself. So that's what we talk about when we say, Kibud Av V'Em is really a part of Hakaras HaTov. When we have to thank our parents, what it means is, they give us so much. They provide us with everything we have in our lives. And even though we feel that we've perhaps surpassed our parents, and now we've moved on, and we're running our own lives, and we're doing our own thing, but always remember, what you have been given, what you have been provided with, if you don't understand that you always have to go to the root of all of your success and understand that it only came about because your parents nurtured you and did everything for you, if you don't understand how important, how central that idea is, you'll end up not even thanking God Himself for all of your successes in life either. This is what we say, this is what we think about when we say every Shabbos and Nishmas, Hamuhulal Berov HaTishbachos. Gratitude is such a central theme. So again, in getting back to where we started, we said the Minchas Chinuch has a discussion whether or not we assume this is a mitzvah that's bein adam lachavero, or it's bein adam lamakom. What exactly is the difference? What do I care? So you classify it as bein adam lachavero, or you categorize it as bein adam lamakom. What exactly is the difference? Either way, it's a mitzvah that you have to fulfill. So why should it make any difference whether or not it's bein adam lachavero or bein adam lamakom? So there are some major differences. One goes as follows. The Gemara says in Maseches Yuma daf Pehei Amud Beis. The Gemara says when it comes to the time of year when we want to do tshuva. So the Gemara tells us there's a major stark difference between a mitzvah shebein adam lachavero and something that's been adam lamakom. Let's say I did something wrong. I spoke Lashon Hara. Actually, not a good example. Something else. I was mechallel Shabbos. So now it's Yom Kippur. I want to do tshuva. How do I do tshuva? It's a whole process. You have to feel bad about what you did. You have to do ashamnu, whatever you're going to do, right? You're gonna do a tshuva process. But it's between you and God. And then Yom Kippur comes and you're good. And you get a kapara. That's what we know. But what happens if I did something to somebody else? Nothing to do with God. I hurt somebody else. So how do I get a kapara in Yom Kippur? So you'll say? You have to ask mechila. Says the Gemara, for Avera Shedemen Adam Lachavero, Ein Yom Kippur Mechaper, Yom Kippur won't work, Ad Sheiratzes Chavero, until you make up with that person, until you go and speak to them personally, and ask for their Mechila, then Yom Kippur will work. But if you don't do that, Yom Kippur will not work. So what happens if you have a person who is ungrateful to their parents, who doesn't treat them respectfully, and now a couple of months go by, come to Yom Kippur, and you feel terrible about what you did? Is this something that's between you and God? Is it something that Yom Kippur will automatically erase? Or do we assume that this is something that's between you and your parents, and you have to work it out? And if you don't work it out, Yom Kippur won't help you. So that's question number one. When we talk about this being Bein Adam LaChaver, Bein Adam LaMakom, how is Yom Kippur going to relate to this mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em? Can Yom Kippur absolve me of my issue in Kibud Av V'Em? Or do I have to take it up with my parents and actually discuss it with them? And then Yom Kippur will work. That's the question. Now, it's not as simple as that. Why? Because you take, for example, another fascinating story, and that is, you have a machlokas, you have a disagreement between Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and the Chafetz Chaim. What happens? We all have a problem with Lashon Hara. Nobody is careful enough about Lashon Hara. And we all know it. So what happens? I talk Lashon Hara, and I realize a few months go by, and I feel terrible about what I did. So what do I do now? I violated a mitzvah, Shebein Adam LaChavero, correct? Everyone will agree, Lashon Hara, I damaged you. I did something wrong to the person that I spoke about. So Lashon Hara is certainly Bein Adam LaChavero. So now, seemingly I should have to go ahead and tell that person, by the way, I want you to know, I said something terrible about you. I want to get myself a mechila. So let's discuss it, let's talk about it. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, you're going to go to that person and tell them what you said about them? It's just going to make them feel worse. You're making the problem worse. So what should I do? So what do you say? What should I do? Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, You have no right to go to that person and ask them and tell them and discuss with them what you said. Why? Because now you're going to make the problem worse. So how am I supposed to get a mechila? Says if you spell cilantro too bad. You can't. Think about how scary that is. Think about how scary that is. You spoke Lashon Hara about someone, now you feel bad about it. How do you get a mechila? You can't. Why? Because what am I supposed to do? It's in the category of Ben Adam Lachavero. Ben Adam Lachavero means I have to go and discuss it with the person, but I can't discuss it with the person because it's going to make them feel worse. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, this is why you should be careful with Lashon Hara. Because there's no way out of it. Because there's no way out of it. It's frightening. It's frightening when you think about it from that perspective. The Chafetz Chaim strongly disagreed with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And he said that's an impossibility. How can you say such a thing? How can you tell me that I spoke Lashon Hara about somebody, I committed a crime, and there's no way to grant myself a mechila for that? It can't be. It doesn't make sense. Says the Chafetz Chaim a very important principle. Chafetz Chaim says, when does the Gemara assume that when you violate a mitzvah shebein adam lachaber, you have to actually go ad shiiratza es chaber, you have to talk to the person, you have to make good with them? That's only if I cause them a real physical damage. But if I didn't cause them any noticeable damage, I don't have to ask a mechila from them. Then it's just between me and God. That's what the Chafetz Chaim posits. And that's what he suggests. If I speak Lashon Hara about somebody, and now I make them lose their job, I go to the boss and I say, this person is a terrible person, and they spoke, I got a Shiloh last week, a fascinating question. A guy calls me up and he says, a guy from not this community, he calls me up and he says that he's in some firm, and they have many different factions to the firm. So they have a couple of lawyers that work for them, and they try to make deals with people. So they send always somebody who makes a deal together with the lawyer. The lawyer negotiates, and the person who makes the deal comes up with all the provisions of what exactly the deal should outline. So he told me that there was a religious woman who was in his firm. I hope it's no one here. It was a religious woman in this firm, and she was the lawyer representing his company, and they were now meeting with one of the biggest clients of the year. And it happens to be that she was talking extremely disrespectfully to this client, to the point that the client said to him afterward that he was very turned off from her, and he hopes that in the future they will be treated more respectfully than they were this time. Now he's concerned that they're going to lose one of their biggest clients of the year. On the other hand, he's concerned that if he tells the boss, they're going to fire this lawyer. There's no question about it. And he wanted to know, what should I do? Lashon Hara Shailas are not simple. They're not simple at all. But here the Chafetz Chaim says, you have to think about it. If I'm telling a Lashon Hara where it's going to make the person lose their job, so over here, I think, I discussed it with my father, he told me that in such a case, that's my obligation. I was hired by a company, the company has to be successful, the company, part of my obligation to the company, part of my being hired is that I'm going to look out for their best of interest. If somebody is talking disrespectfully, and if somebody is totally out of character and out of line, I have to report that, because otherwise my company is going to suffer. That's part of my obligation to the company. So if you talk about a Lashon Hara like that, if it's not permissible, you just make up a story because you're jealous of the lawyer who's sitting next to you, and you just make up a story and now the boss fires them, well then you have a real problem. Then you got to talk to the person. But says the Chafetz Chaim, if you just said something slanderous about somebody else and nothing happened because of it, nothing really came out, says the Chafetz Chaim, that's between you and God. That's not between you and the other person. You don't have to go and ask a mechila. So when we talk about Kibud Av V'Em, do my parents really suffer because I didn't respect them? Not really. I just happened not to be there when they needed a ride to the airport or they needed a ride to the doctor's office. I wasn't there for them. It happened last week. So I wasn't there for them. So who do I need to ask a mechila from? Do I need to ask a mechila from God or do I need to ask a mechila from my parents? How does that work? Well, it depends on this question. Whenever you have a Ben Adam Lachavero, it comes down to this question. Yes, the Gemara says Ben Adam Lachavero is Ad Shiiratzas Chaver. You have to make up with the person, with the individual themselves. But at the same time, the Chafetz Chaim says, if there was no real monetary loss, if there was nothing real that was lost because of the incident, then perhaps it's only between me and God. So I think when you come to this type of conversation about Kibud Av V'Em, you have to think about that consideration as well. We come to a second major difference, and that would be, does this apply to non-Jews? Should we assume that a non-Jew has an obligation to respect their parents? I assume everybody in here is probably Jewish. If that's the case, this probably is not so applicable to us. But the question does come up every so often when you have a ger, when you have a convert, do they have to respect their parents who are not Jewish? So that's a very interesting question. And I think if you understand that this is really, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes about it, and basically we assume, if we have the understanding that this is part of Hakaras HaTov, that this is part of our obligation of gratitude to other people, then we have to keep in mind that it shouldn't make a difference if it's a Jew, if it's a non-Jew, if it's my parents. We have that obligation of Hakaras HaTov. So you say, what do you mean? It's not part of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach to have Hakaras HaTov. Where does it say in that list of seven? It doesn't say anywhere, be nice to other people. It doesn't say that. So there are many who suggest that when it comes to mitzvah sichlius, when it comes to something that makes sense, so a non-Jew is obligated in that the same way a Jew is. So you take, for example, the city of Sodom was destroyed. Why were they destroyed? Rashi tells us because they were stealing money, they were terrible people, they were, right? All sorts of things. So, is that a reason to destroy a city? Where did you ever tell me, God, that I shouldn't steal from somebody else? Where did you ever tell me that I should be nice to someone? We all know the Medrash says, they didn't invite people into their home. Yeah, and therefore I should be destroyed? Where do you ever tell me that I should invite someone into my house? Well, the answer is, some explain, the answer is, that's obvious. If somebody's roaming around the streets and needs a place to go, that's obvious that you should take care of them, that you should provide for them. And that is something that's an obligation that's shared both by Jews and non-Jews alike. That's what many assume. You take also, for example, the Rambam writes in the Mor Nevuchim, Korach is punished. Lama hikisa asonecha. I'm sorry. Bilam. Bilam is punished. Why is it? Why do you hit the horse? So the Rambam writes, you know why Bilam was punished? You know why Bilam ended up having a hard time? Because he hit his animal, and there's an isser of tzar balei chayim. You're not allowed to afflict animals the same way you're not allowed to afflict other people. May I ask, was Bilam a Jew or a non-Jew? Bilam was a non-Jew. So Bilam had to follow the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Where in the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach does it say that you're not allowed to be cruel to animals? Doesn't say it anywhere. So why can you punish Bilam for being cruel to his animal, for hitting the animal, if in fact he was never obligated to be nice to his animal? Well, the answer is, says the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, that's a mitzvah sichlius. It makes sense. If you're just hitting an animal for no reason, what are you doing? This is God's creation. You have no right to do that. So when it comes to a mitzvah sichlius, to something that's intuitive, to something that's instinctive, to something that makes sense, we assume that Jews and non-Jews alike are obligated. So when it comes to kibud av v'em, I would imagine that's something that's intuitive, it's instinctive. Hakaras HaTov is something that we're all obligated to feel to other people that help us, that assist us in many ways. And therefore, that should apply to a Jew and a non-Jew alike. Now, what's interesting is when you talk about this obligation, whether it's ben adam l'chaver or ben adam l'makom, what's interesting is as follows. On the one hand, the Gemara says, and the Shulchan Aruch Paskin is like this, let's say my parents are mochel on the kibud av v'em. Let's say my parents are mochel. For example, we assume that part of the avelus process on a parent is part of the din of kibud av v'em. Right? So part of the din to respect my parents is, for Yud Beis Chodesh, I shouldn't go to weddings. Why? Because I show my life is totally changed because the parent is no longer here. That's part of respecting my parents. My father, for example, has a wedding 3 times a week, and he's running around all over the place, and he always has to be somewhere. So when my grandfather was very old, my grandfather told my father, kibud av v'em is something I'm allowed to be mochel. I'm allowed to give up on. So I know you're a very important person. I know you're very busy. When I pass away one day, I don't want you holding yourself back from going to your student's wedding in the 12 months after my passing. Now, my grandfather was a great man, so he thought like that. Most people don't think like this. And most parents aren't willing to give up on their respect, on their honor. But my grandfather told my father that he shouldn't observe the dinim of Yud Beis Chodesh for him because he knows that his students really need him at their weddings. And his students really, it will mean a lot to them if my father won't be there. It will really make a difference to the wedding. So we know that kibud av v'em is something that you can grant mechila for, which shows that it's really a bein adam l'chavero. If it's between me and God, why is it up to my father to absolve me of my responsibility? Can my father come along and say, oh, you don't have to wear tefillin today, it's fine. You're not obligated, it's okay. Of course he can. He has no right to say, it's not between me and him, it's between me and God. So over here also, we assume it's partially bein adam l'chavero because my father has the right to be mochel on his kavod, on his mitzvah of kibud av v'em. So now let's go a little bit further. What exactly are the parameters of kibud av v'em? Now this is a very important question. Let's look at a Gemara together, where the Gemara says, in number hey. Skip down a little bit. The Gemara says in number hey, bab mitzia daf lamed beiz amid aleph. Says the Gemara as follows. What happens if my father tells me to do something that I'm not allowed to do? For example, I happen to be a Kohen, happen not to be, but let's say I was a Kohen, and we know that a Kohen is not allowed to go into a Beis HaKvaris. Kohen is not allowed to go into a cemetery. So what happens? I have a mitzvah of Hashavas Avedim, let's say. there's a lost object, I see somebody's suitcase in the Beis HaKvaros. So what do? I'm a Kohen, I have a mitzvah in front of me, but I'm not allowed to go into a Beis HaKvaros. So the answer is, you're not allowed to go. Okay? Answer is, you're not allowed to go, because you're a Kohen, you're not allowed to defile your kahuna by going to a Beis HaKvaros, into a cemetery. Says the Gemara like this, Beis HaKvaros lo yitamela. If the object happens to be in a Beis HaKvaros in a cemetery, even though I have an obligation of Hashavas Aveda, I'm not allowed to go in and defile my kahuna by performing the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Now says the Gemara, what happens? Tanu Rabbanan, minayin shem amar lo aviv hitame. Now what happens if my father calls me over and says, Shai, you're a Kohen, but I want you to go into the cemetery. So what do? I have a mitzvah of kibud avim. My father tells me to go into the cemetery. On the other hand, I have an iser to go into a cemetery. I'm a Kohen. I can't defile my kahuna. So what do? Well, says the Gemara, the same way that if I have the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda in front of me, I see a suitcase in the middle of the cemetery, I'm not allowed to defile my kahuna to go get it. Similarly, if my father tells me to go into a Beis HaKvaros, I'm not allowed to go ahead and defile my kahuna just to listen to my father. Says the Gemara, Osha Amalo Al Tachzir. How do you know? Let's say I find a lost object somewhere in the street and I'm running around trying to find the owner. And my father says to me, stop bothering yourself. What are you doing? You have better things to be doing than that. How do you know you shouldn't listen to your parent when they tell you not to fulfill the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda? Says the Gemara, Shanamar, Ish ima ba'aviv tiro. Yes, we have an obligation to fear, to respect our parents. Ve'esh shabsosai tishmaru ani Hashem. Always remember, even though you have an obligation to respect your parents, always remember, ultimately, ani Hashem. Kulchem chayavim b'chvodi. Both you and your father and your mother and your in-laws and your grandparents, all of them are obligated to respect me, God. So it doesn't make a difference that your father is telling you to do something or not to do something. If it's something that God tells you to do or not to do, your father or mother has no right to get involved in that kind of discussion, in that kind of discussion. That's what the Gemara tells us from that pasuk, ani Hashem. As the Rashba, other Rishonim there ask the same question. I don't understand. The father wakes up on the wrong side of the bed one day and he just says to you, you know, I know you're a Kohen, but I want you to go into that cemetery because, there's no because, I just want you to go into the cemetery. Ask the Rashba, is that really part of the mitzvah of Kibud Av Va'Em? My father calls me up one morning and he says, I want you to do 50 jumping jacks. Why? It's dumb. I want you to stand on your head for 10 minutes. I want you to drive around the block. I'm obligated to listen to my father when he tells me something silly that has no point, that has no reason. So what does this Gemara mean? The Gemara says, if my father calls me up one morning and says, I know you're a Kohen, but go into that cemetery for no good reason. I just want you to go walk to a cemetery today. Ask the Rashba, is that really part of my obligation of Kibud Av Va'Em? My father calls me up and tells me to do something silly that has no difference to his life. I have to listen to him? He calls me up and says, do jumping jacks. I have to listen to him? Where does that come from? Says the Rashba, no, what the Gemara means to say is, the father is really calling up the child and saying, I want you to go into that cemetery because I want you to do something for me there. Not stam that he just calls him up out of the blue and says, go into a cemetery. Says the Rashba, another Rishonim, but if the father would call you, or the mother, would just call you one day and tell you to do something, to drive around the block for no good reason, you have no obligation of Kibud Av Va'Em to listen to them. If they're calling you and telling you to do something that makes no difference to their life, Kibud Av Va'Em does not dictate how you have to act in your life. Kibud Av Va'Em dictates how you relate to your parents. It doesn't dictate how you take every move in your life. And therefore, the Rishonim explain, and this is quoted in the Raman Shulchan Aruch, we assume that the parents have no right. The parameters of Kibud Av Va'Em don't go so far that the parents have a right to tell you how to govern your own life. The parents have a right to tell you something, how they want you to relate to them. But if they just call you out of the blue and tell you to do something silly, you don't have to listen to them. So that's number one thing to keep in mind that we learn from this Gemara. Number two, and this is a very important halacha that we learn in Shulchan Aruch and Yerideya, Simen Reish Mem, the Shulchan Aruch writes, what you see from this Gemara is also that if a parent ever tells you to violate a law in the Torah, and the Shulchan Aruch assumes this is not only a law which is a biblical law, but if they tell you to violate even a din midrabanan, for example, Hanukkah is only din midrabanan. My parent calls me up and says, I don't want you to light Hanukkah candles. Should I listen to them? No. Why? Because even though the mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles is only midrabanan, your parents have no right to tell you not to follow either a biblical mitzvah or a rabbinic mitzvah. Either one. The parents don't have a right. That's out of their bounds. That's out of their limits. They don't have a right to tell me how to perform my relationship with God. So that's number two. That's what the Gemara says. The Rush even takes it so far as to say, the Rush writes, this is quoted in the Turin Simon Reish Mem, what if the parent calls you up and says, you know, I don't want you talking to this person ever again. Happens. Parents say, I don't want you talking to this person ever again. Should I listen to my parents? Or, for example, the parent knows that somebody really hurt me. The parent knows somebody went around, wrote an article about me, made up a story, did terrible things to me. I happen not to care. I have a lot of humility. I couldn't care less. I move on with life. I'm friendly with the person. I make pretend like it never happened. My parent says, I'm angry. I don't want you ever talking to that person. And you know what? If they come and ask your forgiveness, don't ever forgive them. Should I listen to my parent? Says the Rush, no. Because we have a din in the Torah, Lo sisna es achicha bilavavecha. Don't ever hate another Jew. Don't ever hate other people. Don't be disrespectful to others. And my parent has no right to tell me to violate one of the rules of the Torah. So what you see is here, number one, the parent is not allowed to tell you one day just to do something silly. The parent is not allowed to call you up one day and say, I want you to drive around the block. The parent is also not allowed to tell you, I want you to go one day into a cemetery. They're not allowed just to call you and say, I want you to violate one of the laws in the Torah. Not only that, the parent is not even allowed to call you and say, I want you to violate one of the laws that the Chachamim said. You're not allowed to listen to the parent if they say, don't light Hanukkah candles. That's also not within the parent's range. And not only that, the parents don't have a right to tell you not to talk to somebody else or not to be respectful to somebody else. Why? Because that's out of their limitations. That's something that's beyond their reach. It's something that has nothing to do with your relationship to them. It has to do with your relationship to other people. It's your relationship to God, your relationship to your friends or to your colleagues. That's something that your parents don't have any right to be involved with. Now, there's a very, very touchy shiloh that comes up all the time, every single year, and that is, let's say you have a child who decides, I want to go to yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. I want to go to a certain seminary. And the parents say, absolutely not. You have to go to secular college. You have to go here. You have to go there. Who is right and who is... Okay, it's a good thing no children are here. Somebody is. So this is a very interesting question that comes up every year when you have, unfortunately, parents and children who get into certain disagreements about what should be done with regard to their education. Now, this is a very serious question. So let's just, before the discussion begins, let's just put it out there. Parents usually have more life experience and are more mature than the children. So very often when the parents are telling the children, I think this is what you should do, they're not saying because they're forcing the kid. They're not saying because I want my kid to go to Harvard so that I can look good. You're saying it because I think if my son goes to Harvard, he will have a better shot at getting a better job. So really, the parent is probably saying it for their own good. I'm sorry, for the children's good. That's not always the case, and we all know that it's not always the case. So we're talking about not that case. We're talking about where you have parents who are in it for themselves. They're in it because... what are they going to tell their friends if the kid only goes to YU? What's going to be? Or my kid is only going to go to Turo. How can I handle that? They're only going to go to this yeshiva or to that yeshiva. What's going to be? What's everyone going to say? They're only saying it for their own purposes. Is that something that the child has to listen to just because the parent's in it for themselves? On the one hand, keep it up aim. On the other hand, does a parent really have a right to get involved? So the Gemara says a very interesting halacha. The Gemara tells us that Yaakov Avinu was punished. Yaakov Avinu was punished, and his son Yosef was taken away from him for many, many years. How many years was Yosef lost? 22 years. Why 22 years? Would we come up with that number? So Rashi on Chumash says, because when Yaakov Avinu ran away from his parents' home, and he was afraid of his brother Esau, what happens? He gets stuck in the house of Laban for 22 years. What were you doing in the house of Laban for 22 years? Your father, the old man Yitzchak, is at home. He needs your help. So you're violating the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. You should have been home. Okay, you ran away from your brother Esav. Everything calmed down. 22 years you're waiting in the house of Laban. What are you doing there? You're trying to make a few bucks? You're trying to make some money? You're being a shepherd? What are you doing? Says the Gemara, because Yaakov Avinu decided to stay away from his father 22 years, therefore he was punished, and his son was taken away from him for 22 years. Ask the Gemara a very important question. Think about how many years Yaakov Avinu was away. Rashi on Chumash, for those who learn Rashi on Chumash, in a few weeks you'll see, Rashi tells us, 14 years Yaakov Avinu goes to the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver to learn. And then after that, 22 years he spends in the house of Laban. So why was Yosef only taken away 22 years? Shouldn't Yosef have been taken away for 22 plus 14, which is 36, correct? No? So why shouldn't Yosef have been taken away for 36 years instead of 22 years? Yaakov Avinu left his father's house. His father is an old man. Yitzchak Avinu needs his help. And he decides, no, I'm not interested in my father. Too bad. I need to take care of myself. So what does he do? He runs to the house of love in 22 years. He's punished for that. What about the 14 years that he's in yeshiva? Says the Gemara, Gadol Talmud Torah Yosem Mikibud Ava'im. For the 14 years, I'm sorry to tell you, but Talmud Torah is greater than Kibud Ava'im. Straight in the Gemara, Shulchan Aruch quotes it, La'alacha Simin Reish Mem and Yerodea. Everyone can look it up. I'm not making up a story. The Gemara tells us clearly, Gadol Talmud Torah Yosem Mikibud Ava'im. The mitzvah, the chi of the obligation of Talmud Torah is greater than the mitzvah of Kibud Ava'im. And therefore, when Yaakov Avinu chooses to go to yeshiva for 14 years, even though he's neglecting his parents, still he has the mitzvah of Talmud Torah and he's allowed to leave the comfort of his parents' home. He's allowed to leave. He's allowed to give up on that obligation of Kibud Ava'im in order to make himself become a successful Talmud Chacham in order to learn in the yeshiva. Now, the question is, let's say nowadays, so what do? The kid wants to go to this yeshiva, and I say, you should go to that yeshiva. So let's say everyone's in agreement that they should go to yeshiva, or the girl should go to seminary. So everyone agrees. Just the girl says, I should go to this one, and he says, I should go to that one. So what do then? So you say, yeah, Gadol Talmud Torah Yosem Mikibud Ava'im. Talmud Torah is greater than Kibud Ava'im, but my parents are telling me to go to yeshiva. I just want to go to a different one. So do they have a right to hold me back from going to the other yeshiva instead of going to this one? So the Achronim write in Shulchan Aruch also that we assume it even goes that far because lonely kol adam yachol limod. We don't assume that somebody always is going to find favor in the Rabbeim in this yeshiva as opposed to that one. We don't assume that every seminary works for every person. If I feel, and I'm a mature adult, and I feel that I'm going to do better in this place than my parents thinking they want me to go to that place, I'm even allowed to not listen to them. Now, who's going to pay the tuition bill? I'm not sure. And who's going to take care of you? And when they come, are they going to come visit you in Israel? I don't know exactly. But this is a discussion that comes up as well. Do the parents have a right to hold you back? Let's say everyone's in agreement. You should go to yeshiva. Just the question is, should you go to this one or to that one? I even have a right to choose against my parents' wishes. I even have a right to choose that yeshiva instead of this one because I think I'm going to do better there than I will in their place. So that's with regard to Talmud Torah when that comes to a front with Kibud Ava'im. So now, we come to the question that we started with, and that is, do my parents have a right, also happens every so often, do my parents have a right to hold me back from marrying a certain woman? Do my parents have a right to hold me back? I think this guy is the man of my dreams. I really want to marry him. My parents say, he's a lowlife. I don't want you to marry him. So look, if the parents are looking out for my interest and they say, he's a drug dealer and this person has major emotional issues, and I think that, not that those are the same, but somebody has major emotional issues and they're going to be on medication and there's going to be a problem and it's not so simple. Okay, so obviously the parents are looking out for my good. I should probably, as a mature adult, I should probably listen to the advice of adults. But let's say that's not the case. Let's say the parents feel, you can't go out with this person. A Baal Tshuva. It's not for me. You can't go out with this person. He's a convert. I want a fancy, very well-known family that everybody knows. Or you know what? This family's not wealthy enough. I don't think you should marry them. Because they don't have enough status in the community. Or they're not rabbinic enough, or they're not this enough, or that enough. The parents decide, for all sorts of reasons, that they don't like the shidduch that you are interested in engaging with. Is that something that the parents have a right to interfere with? So this is also discussed in Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch writes, there are three reasons that a child does not have to listen to the parents when it comes to getting married. Reason number one goes as follows. The Gemara in Kiddushin tells us, what happens? I know that my father needs to go to Florida. My father needs the warm weather in Florida in the winter, and it's very important for him. The problem is my father doesn't have a job, and he doesn't have any money to get there. So who pays for him to go to Florida? Well, the alternative is that he won't go. Right? So that's not a good question. But let's say my father has money and I have money. My father calls me up and then he says, I got to go to Florida for the winter, book me a ticket. Who's supposed to pay for that ticket? Is part of my obligation of Kibud Ava'im to pay for my parents' ticket also? Or is it just to arrange the ticket and do the dirty work for them? What's the answer? The Gemara comes to the conclusion, Kibud Av is Mishal Av, v'lo Mishal Ben. Kibud Ava'im is a mitzvah that has to come from the parents' checkbook and not from my account. I am not obligated to spend money for my parents' Kibud Ava'im. I'm obligated to make all the arrangements. I'm obligated to make sure that I do everything I can to make it as easy as possible for them. However, I don't have to spend my own money for my parents to go to Florida. They have to spend the money. Now, what happens if the parents don't have any money? So that's another discussion. The Shulchan Aruch says in such a case, we assume that's no less than the mitzvah of tzedakah. The same way I have a mitzvah of tzedakah to help other people, I have a mitzvah to my parents also to help them. So that's out of the realm of Kibud Ava'im. When we talk about Kibud Ava'im, I, as a child, am not obligated to spend money to take care of my parents. Now, there's a very interesting story said about Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. There was a student in the yeshiva that said his parents sent him a letter. They want him to come home and visit them. They're very old. They need his help, whatever it is. So he told us, he went to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik and he said to him, what should I do? We paskin ki budav is mishal av, alo mishal ben. My parents didn't send me a train ticket to get home. How should I get there? What am I supposed to do? I have to spend my own money? I don't have so much money. Why should I spend the money to go and visit my parents? Well, you're a rotten son. That's number one. But leaving that aside, Reb Chaim said to him, you're right. The parents didn't send you a ticket, so go walk. You have an obligation of kibud av v'aim, and you're right, your parents don't have to pay for it. You want to take a train to make life easier for yourself? That's your problem. Your obligation goes as far as walking. So obviously we wouldn't say my obligation means I have to carry my parents on my hands down to Florida. That's a little bit absurd. However, the Gemara does say very clearly that kibud av is mishal av v'lo mishal ben. The children do not have to pitch in for the parents' expenses. Now, it comes up very often when you have, unfortunately, parents who need to be in a facility and they might not have savings and they might not have money, so what do you do? So in a case like that, obviously, the mitzvah of tzedakah is something that we have to think about. And not only that, the Achronim say, generally in the mitzvah of tzedakah, we're told you shouldn't give all your money to one cause. You should try to diversify a little bit. The same way in investments, we try to diversify. So over here also, we want to invest in this, we want to invest in that, a little bit in supporting yeshivas, a little bit in supporting orphans, a little bit in supporting special needs children. We have all sorts of needs that we want, and we're supposed to diversify. When it comes to the parents, the Shulchan Aruch says you should give all of your tzedakah to them instead of diversifying everywhere else. Even though generally in tzedakah we assume you should diversify, if the parents are in need, you should take away all that diversity and focus all of your attention and your money and your resources toward the parents. So that's a very important thing to keep in mind as well. But again, it's out of the realm of kibud av v'aim. Now we're talking about tzedakah, we're not talking about kibud av v'aim. So say the Achronim as follows. Again, back to our question. The parent says, I object to this girl, I object to this boy, I don't want you to marry them. Not because I think it's bad for you, but because you know deep down that it's bad because it's going to hurt the parents, not because it's going to hurt you. So in a case like that, does the child have an obligation to listen to the parents? Well, answer number one is, the reason you don't have to listen is because we always assume kibud av is mishal av v'lo mishal ben. If I don't have to even spend money for my parents, kibud av v'aim, I certainly don't have to give up my life for my parents, kibud av v'aim. Finally, I've been dating forever, I finally found the right girl, now you're going to tell me I can't marry them? That's worse than spending all my money. I'll never find the right one. So that's reason number one that you don't have to listen to the parents, because we assume the obligation of kibud av v'aim is the parents never have a right to tell you to spend money that's yours. So too, they don't have a right to tell me to destroy my life. I finally dated for so long, I finally found the right person. They don't have a right to tell me that I shouldn't go ahead with my life dreams. That's number one. Number two, we learned before that the parents don't have a right to tell you to violate any din, any halacha in the Torah. Over here, I have a mitzvah, I have a halacha that I have to get married. Not only that, part of getting married is, the Gemara says in Kiddushin, Asur l'kadesh isha ad she'irena. The Gemara, on a very simple level, means you have to see the girl before you get married. Nowadays it means you have to date the girl before you get married. You have to make sure that you're compatible with this person. So my parent is going to say to me, I don't want you to marry this person, I found the perfect person for you, and it's this one, and trust me, just marry them. What do you mean? Part of my obligation is to make sure that I'm compatible with this person, to make sure that it makes sense, to make sure that I really am able to have a life with this person, that our marriage is going to last. Well, in a case like that, my parent is essentially saying, don't follow the laws of the Torah. Because the laws of the Torah dictate, marry someone, make sure you're comfortable with them, make sure you're compatible. That's all part of the mitzvah of getting married. And if my parent is interfering and telling me, don't follow the laws of the Torah, let's do it a different way, the parents don't have a right to get involved in that sort of way. That's number two, reason that we find in Shulchan Aruch. Number three, the reason is, like we said before, if the parent tells you something that has no relevance to them, that's totally out of bounds for them. The same way they don't have a right to call me up and say, drive around the block 10 times before you go to shul in the morning, they have no right to say that. It doesn't make any difference between my relationship with them if I'm going to drive around the block or not. So too, they have no right to get involved to interfere with who I marry, because that has nothing to do with them. Well, hard to say it has nothing to do with them, but the Shulchan Aruch assumes it has nothing to do with them. You'll say, what do you mean? They want a pleasant daughter-in-law in the house. They want a pleasant son-in-law in the house. They don't want this rotten person. Okay, whatever. But the Shulchan Aruch assumes that that's out of bounds for them. That's not something that they have a right to do. So that's when it comes to this. That's when it comes to this. Someone asked a couple of weeks ago, what's the halacha? We spoke about the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. We spoke about the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. So somebody came to me afterward and said, what's the halacha? I really want to move to Eretz Yisrael. I'm really interested. My family wants to. But my parents live in America, and my parents need my help. So should I stay back because I have to help my parents or not? On the one hand, I want to fulfill my obligation of living in Eretz Yisrael, of doing what I can, and God tells me to live in Eretz Yisrael, and I think it will be good for my family. On the other hand, how can I leave my parents behind? It's the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. Well, isn't that the same story as Yaakov Avinu? Yaakov Avinu wants to care for his parents, and he wants to fulfill the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, and take the Achronim quote from Avraham Avinu. Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladetecha mibeis avicha la'aretz asher areka. What is Avraham Avinu told? I want you to go to Eretz Yisrael, and I want you to live there, and I want you to give up everything you had before, and I want you to neglect your parents, and I want you to leave your family. What do you mean, leave my family? Leave my parents? Leave my family? What's going to be with Kibud Av V'Em? What do you mean? I'm going to go to Eretz Yisrael and give up the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em? So the Achronim say that a person, when you talk about the considerations of moving to Eretz Yisrael, and there are many considerations, like we said a few weeks ago, but a consideration for moving to Eretz Yisrael is not Kibud Av V'Em, because again, we assume a parent does not have a right to tell a child not to fulfill the laws of the Torah. And therefore, if I'm trying to fulfill my obligation of living in Eretz Yisrael, and my parents happen to be holding me back, and they say, well, we're not going to be able to see the grandchildren often enough, or we're not going to have your help, and we're not going to have your assistance the way we used to, that, the Achronim say very clearly, is not a factor when it comes to the discussion of whether or not a person should fulfill their obligation of living in Eretz Yisrael. Again, there might be, like we said, many other factors that you have to keep in mind. So let's just quickly review everything we discussed. We started off that there are three different types of kava that we find. One is Kibud Av V'Em for parents. One is the kava that we have to have for Talmidei Chachamim. One is the kava that we have to have for Kohanim. And again, we pointed out that there are three very different categories of kava. Then we discussed the Menchas Chinuch, whether or not we assume that this is a mitzvah Shebein Adam LaChavera or a mitzvah Shebein Adam LaMakom. The major differences are, should we assume it's a mitzvah Shebein Adam LaChavera, perhaps? If I neglect my parents, if I don't respect them the way I'm supposed to, how do I get a mechila when it comes to Yom Kippur? Do I have to actually discuss the issue with them? Or should we assume, no, it's between me and God, it's not between me and my parents, and Yom Kippur will be able to absolve me of my wrongdoing? A second major difference is, should we assume that non-Jews are obligated in this mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em? If you assume it's just between me and God, then perhaps they might not be obligated. If you assume it's really part of Hakaras HaTov, it's part of showing our gratitude for everything that we've been given in our life, everything we've been provided by our parents, then perhaps this should apply to non-Jews as well. We spoke about the centrality of the mitzvah of Hakaras HaTov and how the Medrash tells us, Bishvil Bikurim, part of the reason why the world was created was because one day there's going to be a mitzvah Bikurim, and that is all about showing our gratitude, showing how much we owe the Ribono Shel Olam, and that's something for us to keep in mind. The Ramban says, Tachlis Kol HaMitzvos, the reason why we fulfill our obligation of mitzvahs every single day is because God wants that we should always keep in mind the fact that we have so much that we're indebted to Him for in our lives. Then we spoke about what are the parameters of the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. On the one hand, we said the parents don't have a right, number one, to tell a child to do something that has no toelos to them, that has no value to them, to just call up a child and tell them to do something that doesn't make any difference in the parent's life. That's something that a parent does not have a right to do. Number two, we said a parent does not have a right to tell a child to violate any mitzvah in the Torah, not only a biblical obligation, but even a rabbinic obligation, or even a minhag. A parent does not have a right to tell a child to violate anything like that. Then we spoke about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah versus Kibud Av V'Em. When you have the child wants to go to a certain yeshiva, the parents feel, for their own benefit, they feel that it's not something that they're proud of, it's not something they want. So the child, again, does not have to listen to the parents. And then again, we spoke about when it comes to the mitzvah of getting married, there are three reasons that are given why the child can go ahead with their dreams and does not really have to oblige with what the parents feel is the right thing for them. Might not be wise. Again, like we said, you always have to keep in mind the parents might have more life experience and might be more understanding of what's best for the child, but if that's not the case, then again, the child might not have to listen to the parents. I just want to bring to everyone's attention again tomorrow evening.